busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained, and rode us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, as always, Andrew Farmer. High as balls.
Hi.
On NyQuil. Oh. On NyQuil.
Yes, indeed.
And if anybody's listened to any of the NyQuil episodes prior to this, which there are a few, you know that this is probably going to get at least somewhat interesting. With me, as always, is my co-host, producer, and soon-to-be unfrozen caveman of technology.
Yes, indeed.
The Jedi Cole Houston.
And your NyQuil source, unlike the white of over-the-counter products.
You're the Johnny Depp and blow to my NyQuil. You fly it over
like
by plane.
As long as my customers don't realize they can just walk in and buy it themselves, then my business thrives.
As soon as that
yeah,
realization
once they get
is
wind
made.
Of the fact that it's the Walgreens or...
Okay, so excuse me if I yawn or cough or sneeze. I'm sorry. I'm in the throes of an ague, as the French would say, but I'm fighting out of it. This is a long-promised issue of Hey Kids Comics that we're finally coming around to doing.
Yes, we were dwelling quite a bit on having specific guests, and rather than just perpetuate the promise forever until such time as that particular guest might be available to us.
Right.
An editorial decision was made.
We can do this. We can stand on our own laurels. We can pull this off together.
It was determined that if Andy ever got sick enough, we would go for it.
That's right. It took me being on death's door to bring this issue into the forefront. So here we are doing the long-awaited issue 152 of Hey Kids Comics, Wolf Pack of One.
Yes, indeed.
The loner issue. We do a lot of team-up issues.
We just did, oddly enough.
We just did a team-up. You know, what was weird about that was it was a good it was a good forward to this, because it was really a team of loners.
Yes, that's a good point. A mixed bag of usually loner types plus new characters that one could assume were loners.
Right. It came together for a common good, and I think that that's a unifying theme when it comes to the archetype of loner in comics. So being as this was, I believe, Cole's idea to begin with all those many, many moons ago, I'm going to let Cole go ahead and get us started on what direction you would like to take this first.
Absolutely. Well, in this particular case, I'm going to have to team up.
Oh, here we go.
With you.
All right.
But we want to talk about characters that are solo.
Solo characters.
Solo, but not of the Han variety.
Or the solo, the comic book
character.
Or
the Han Dynasty variety, for that matter.
Well, I'm going to start... I would like to start, in my research for doing this, I actually came across a character that I was unaware of.
Oh, wow.
This will be a good jumping on point, I think. This is a character from Wildcat Comics by Fleetway that goes only by the name of Loner. So they really went meta with this guy.
I honestly do not think it would be possible to conceive of a more perfect jumping off point.
Really don't. Loner is a former mercenary. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
He wears that on his sleeve, apparently.
He not only does he wear that on his sleeve, but he also wears an antique six-shooter that he has adapted to fire an assortment of ammunition on his sleeve. And he looks like Carl Weathers, so we can't discount that.
Oh yeah, you certainly can't fault him anything at that point.
Right. So this character named Loner, who was in 61 issues of comic books that I've never heard of before.
Wow.
Yeah, by Fleetway.
God bless you,
Loner. I love his powers are listed as these two things. So Loner, the powers are listed as A, insanely rich, and B, marksmanship.
Okay. So it means he's hell out on the, you know, when you're throwing the clay pigeons.
Right, right. I guess he won a multi-planet lottery. And then, if this gives you a time period for this, okay, the dates on this, right?
Oh, okay.
So he won a...
There's more to Loner here than meets right. the eye, like Transformer.
Well, if this gives you a time stamp on when these comics were released, he was rich enough to have won a multi-planet lottery, and then give all the whole total sum of $20 million to a project to fly off the Earth and do battle in space, trying to find like a home, like Battlestar Galactica style. So $20 million got him there. Just so you know, that's how rich he was.
What's amazing is the economy rebounded so well by that time period.
Right.
That $20 million became a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. Yeah, it was a lot. So that's...
The current trends continued.
So
you might well have been looking at, you know, $20 billion may have been scant amount of money. But luckily, you know, the economy came back, and we're good to go.
We're good to go. So I will make sure that Cole has access to some of the Loner cover art for our post for this, because it's pretty fantastic. The byline for Loner number one is "In space, no one can hear you kill." So that will have to be
that fills me with joy.
That will have to.
Normally, killing doesn't fill me with joy. I want to point that out in case it has not been obvious if you've been following the show. But in this particular case, the mere suggestion
of "In space, no one can hear you kill" is fantastic. So I'm starting with Loner. Now at this point, all bets are off. I wanted to do like a Joss Whedon-y, got a Joss Whedon-y idea that nothing was sacred. So I started with the Loner.
I think, again, you really, you'd be hard pressed to improve upon that starting point.
I believe so.
And I want to go obscure too, just to get us started. Because, you know, the first thing everybody's going to be thinking of is the characters we had in the flavor art for the most part.
Right.
And then, of course, when I was looking at the research materials, there were characters, I was racking my brain, like, how did I not think of all these different Loner characters that were so painfully obvious in retrospect? And I'm going to go, like, you know, really obscure here. But in this particular case, I can go rather obscure, because when you were talking about Loner, I got to thinking about a character that, by the grace of God, I have not thought of in years. I really count myself lucky that I somehow forgot this for a while, but inevitably, something is going to draw this back in. And this is a character... I'm trying to make a determination as to when this particular Loner character appeared.
Okay.
And, it was, apparently, this was 1991.
Okay.
But the hairstyle was borrowed from 1981, or somewhere between 81 and 85. And I'm talking about none other than the Marvel Comics pandering, meta, making it real, Nightcat.
Nightcat. damn it. Damn you. Damn you.
Stepping out of, as if to step out of an MTV video back when...
Why?
Before a lot of our listeners were born, when MTV showed music videos, Nightcat, the concept was...
Oh.
Shudder. Nightcat was a real superhero.
Yeah. This is when they were doing their thing, right? Where they were trying to break the fourth wall between they were trying to do the meta crossover that superheroes could be real and real people could be superheroes, right?
Absolutely. And Nightcat was an attempt to some have equated her to being sort of the banking on the success question mark in my opinion of Dazzler, who is another loner we should certainly mention, but Nightcat was went beyond what Dazzler was. They actually hired a real actress / singer / model / it's like they hired three people for the price of one. Jacqueline Tavares.
Yes.
Who and in a separate contract also hired her hair.
Oh well, yeah, that was in the writer. I mean, yeah, if you were getting Jacqueline, you're getting the hair and the leather fringe.
Well, you know, in Rider, there had to be 10 bottles of herbal essence.
Just everywhere. Just
at all times.
That she could drink.
Yeah, exactly, to refresh her hair from pretty much any place. So, yes, you have Nightcat. So we'll be sure and look up Nightcat and Marvel, and you will find the internet is ablaze with reminiscences of Nightcat. She lives on somehow. I know precious little about Nightcat other than it was an attempt at sensationalism in an era when Harris Comics was trying to come of their own with a steady stream of Vampirellas.
just a revolving door of long-ass Vampirellas.
And I cannot remember her name, but the very first model they had as their Vampirella was absolutely the hottest. And I think she got shit canned because she didn't have the jugs.
Yeah.
I think that really, they're probably, you know, when they collected together the surveys at the end of a convention, the number one complaint, you know, I'm sure she was absolutely, you know,
stunning. Yeah.
And was visually stunning and everything you look for in a Vampirella. But I'm sure hardcore Harris fans, people who grew up on, you know, pulling themselves through puberty by sneaking a Vampirella out of the grocery store, like a Time magazine, and then just switching them out so it wasn't like stealing, really.
Right.
It was all going to come out in the wash with the rack jobber anyway, but, you know, those people who really knew from Vampirella were missing an aspect, let us say, of Vampirella. But Nightcat, I think, was Marvel's attempt to do the same sort of thing, not as... it was also, I think, a proof of concept, ultimately, for the for Psylocke.
Do you?
Yeah, because Nightcat physically wore the the hip revelation costume.
Right.
It was, you know, it was almost like a butcher's art illustrating where the hip section would be logic. You know, this would be what would count from the point just slightly above the top of her tall boots to the point where
her ribs start.
Yeah. Somewhere between the end of the hips and the beginning of the ribs, in that sort of no man's land, it was sort of annexed by the hip during the 90s, like so much Germany and Poland.
Wow. I think that we're going to have to come back to Nightcat when we do our music episode.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
For sure. And I also am putting this on the line right now.
Comics.
If we can remember to do it, Cole, I want you to put something down where at some point we do a real hard look into the story of Nightcat. And what I mean by that is not just the comic, but how it came into being as a comic.
We have to do a special, like the Hey Kids Comics Nightcat special.
Yeah, I think that that's important. I think that it's really important. So I've got a question for you.
All right.
You know me, when I start looking into this, I start looking at the psychology of how one becomes a loner. Do you start as a loner? Do you become a loner? How does the ego speak to you to make you a loner?
And certainly along those lines, how do you break the cycle? Because all too often there was one article I read complaining it was becoming impossible to find loners in comics anymore.
Right, and that's I think is due in large part to business, right? This isn't art. We say this all the time, that comic book companies, they're a business. As much as we want to believe that this is a pure art form that exists for our pleasure, they're there to make money. So when you've got a Wolverine, who at the point at which Wolverine was at his height, was really only in X-Men and then his own books. Yeah. But when you become that popular, you're going to get co-opted into the Avengers
Four,
which he was. The Avengers, which he was. Alpha Flight, which he was.
The Fantastic Four ceased to be a wholesome family. Not a family comic, mind you. A wholesome family.
Together, right.
Yeah, to just becoming a collection. Granted, at times, someone was always stepping in for the Thing.
Yes.
Because
he's a drama queen.
It was sort of built into the dynamic that he would have a morose leave of absence.
Every year at some point.
Yeah, we'd have a leave of absence so he could be morose.
So what about you? If you were a hero, would you be a loner? Or would you be, would you be a team-based hero or would you be a loner?
I don't know. That's a tough question because I think the real appeal, the bottom line appeal of being a loner is you don't get your Tony Starks getting all up in that. You don't have somebody messing with you. You can be your own boss.
Right.
So there is a built-in appeal. And then within that is the level to which you're capable of working with others, especially other loners. And I think a great example of that is Green Lantern, Green Arrow, because Green Lantern would get top billing because he's got like proper powers from
right.
science. So you have essentially two loners.
Right.
One of them is a hardcore loner. When you go around putting boxing gloves on the end of a stick and fetching it with feathers, you have a hard time getting taken seriously sometimes. And also, you do tend to want to work alone. Like everybody at the time, you get caught up in the whole teen sidekick madness. Everybody was doing it, they're just...
Legitimacy. You wanted legitimacy, so...
Yeah, but for the most part, he liked to get out on his own and get in the hunt. And, for Green Lantern, until the Corps decided to show up and park largely permanently on Earth.
Right.
Like some sort of Star Trek movie franchise. he was a loner as it was meant to be. So I often wonder about the Green Lantern Corps, and a quick aside, as to how much all of those other 37 or 110 or 55,000 sectors suffered. I mean, had crime just become so obsolete in those sectors because they've been at it longer that they literally had to go away for a while so people could get nasty again?
Right. Like,
Chip had to leave because nobody was stealing nobody's nuts.
That's true.
And he eventually, okay,
it's just, the Green Lantern Corps is interesting.
Pogo's back in town, and I gotta go clean it up.
Pogo.
Pogo Possum.
We came around to Pogo Possum.
It became like the dark side of cartoon characters.
That's right. But the Green Lantern Corps is an interesting look at this because they are. It's almost like if you're posted in Antarctica, if you're posted in some real remote far off place, because That's what they did. They had, what, one cop per sector. And we know there are at least 2814 worth of sectors. If Earth was the last, if this sector was the last, that...
Yeah, I think it's like 2815, and they just, like, gave it to just one guy. He was just, because there was nothing... It was like a section that no one had claimed yet. So
right,
just, like,
so you're...
found a guy. Like, here, have a ring.
So you're like Jane Goodall, right? Out there just alone with theoretically a bunch of... A bunch of a species that you don't. I mean, they aren't picking you to be the sector of, you know, that just a, you know, you have to be alone. You know, you aren't given. It isn't a partner system in the Green Lantern Corps. You're left.
Well, it's
alone.
Like a Hill Street Blues, where every now and again everybody goes to the big meeting room and is told to be careful out there.
Right.
And then they all disperse for years.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The poor old guy's just sitting there waiting.
And every time you come back, it's not because it's Kilowog's 51st birthday and you're having a party in the meeting room. It's to get yelled at by little blue guys sitting in a tribunal like episode one of Star Wars, screaming at you.
Yeah, and then they're just basically, you go in to get dressed down.
Yeah, so nobody wants to go back. Nobody wants to be social. Everybody wants to be MOGO because they don't socialize.
Yeah. And they're like, I wish I was a planet.
Right.
Because then I'd be exempt.
So... So why do heroes become loners? Like, that's my question. That's really the bottom line for this for me.
There are some various ways you arrive at that. And I think the first is to be one of a kind. And in that camp, I would put Wolverine or Daredevil, for example.
Okay.
Or even like the Punisher, because who can understand your pain?
Right.
You know, who do you go to in a world of Captain America?
Right.
And the Fantastic Four, and even Spider-Man? You know, there's nobody who can understand what has driven you to the point where committing cold-blooded murder in the name of justice is your brand, your particular...
calling card. That's what you do.
That's the stamp that you have put on justice. And Batman certainly falls in that same way, where, you know, a lot of times people, speaking of loners, will draw a comparison between Spider-Man and Batman. And because they're both, in a sense, driven by guilt.
Right.
And effectively, childhood trauma. Even though Peter was a little older, he was still technically a child. But that's really where the comparators begin to drift, because partly Peter doesn't have a lot of time between becoming the loner that is Spider-Man, because he's kind of an underground hero anyway, where Bruce gets to sit in the lap of luxury,
right,
and brood and steep and plan, and, you know, he's devoted his whole life to this sort of secret agenda.
Yeah.
That only he can only tell the help.
It's true. It's true. Or young boys that he's picked up off the street.
But the help was first. And, you know,
it was, yes.
Some people will, you know, if they are have, you know, live in help like that, they might get them a nice gift at Christmas, apparently, for Alfred. It was, oh, by the way, I'm Batman.
Right, sew me up.
Yeah. You're probably not going to believe that I got all these bruises mountain biking.
Right. So, you know, here's my thing about Batman. In the last year of doing research for this show and just being a fanboy in general, I've kind of come to terms with the fact that I no longer feel sorry for Batman. Like, you're led, you know, every year at some point, you are made to feel sorry for Batman and his maudlin state of, you know, of not having a family and being misunderstood and nobody understanding Batman. I'm done feeling sorry for him, because here's the thing, right? People try. He's not Rorschach. People try to understand Batman. Rorschach, everybody's like, F that. I'm out. Yeah. Peace. Bye, Felicia. Not when you're Batman. When you're Batman, everybody on the JLA Watchtower is saying, let me, you know, I want to understand. Stay here with us. You know, we are a team. You're a valuable member of our team. And like I said in the last issue, an issue before that, Batman inevitably is like, you know, I don't need you guys. You don't understand me. I'm going to go. He's a petulant teenager that goes and hides in his room. That's what he does, and plays with his toys because nobody understands him. And when people are really just reaching out and actually offering help, there are so many heroes, a la Rorschach, a la Phantom Stranger is another one that comes to mind. People like that, where people are like, I don't want, you're too weird to understand. Like, you do you. Sometimes we'll team up, but for the most part, this is not going to happen. But exactly. Batman screws everything up all the time. And will not take the blame for it. Like, will not own up to what he does. So I'm kind of done feeling sorry for Batman and his, you know, in his maudlin Irish whiskey drinking way.
I think it's time for Batman to just, enough is enough. It's time to own the fact that you're okay. We get it. You're the Knight. Let's get going.
Right. Like, somebody needs to sit down and have a come to Jesus with Batman about his behavior is what needs to happen. But the problem is Batman don't listen to anybody.
Yeah.
Batman should be alone. Here, okay, the other question I have, and this, I'm pointing, directing this at you. Who should be a loner? Like, who isn't a loner now that really probably should be on their own? Because they just either don't play well with others, or they're just too messed up to function in a team environment where you could play money ball with it. For every Batman, you could get a Nightwing and a Robin that could equal a Batman for less emotional pain, you know.
Indeed.
For less gestalt.
I honestly think that somebody who's getting a little on there is Martian Manhunter. I think he needs to go out and do the solo thing, because Manhunter tends to just sort of, he's kind of a hanger-on.
Okay.
He literally kind of walks in, jumps on the coattails of established heroes. He's like sitting around like, okay, I'm green, I'm super strong, I can shape-shift, I can pretty much do anything but, except when I get around, you know, open flames, I turn into Peter Boyle and Young Frankenstein. otherwise, you know, he's got some good potential, but he sat around on his cape and his little blue undies with the suspenders and waited and waited, and then one day Starro comes hoving into town. And he runs out like, hey, I'll help you beat up Starro. How about? Because I'm an alien, and I understand how to fight aliens and stuff. So, and they're like, well, you know, Superman's not here. Sure.
Right. We need somebody.
We need an alien. So, thanks. And then all of a sudden, it's like, welcome. You're a charter member of the JLA. And I think that, you know, he has been a team member solely because he was just insinuated himself into the group.
I can see that. You know, thing is about Martian Manhunter is that while he was insinuating himself, he insinuates himself in, and then he never misses an opportunity to remind everybody that he's the last of his race.
Yeah, and you know, you're thinking, poor Cal's like, yeah. Okay, you know, sing me a sad song.
Right, just everybody's lost somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got Martian Manhunter over here like, well, I'm, you know, I don't want to do monitor duty. I'm the last of my race.
Well, then you're like looking at poor, like Wonder Woman's thinking, you know, do I even have a race? I was just like,
right.
I was like Geppetto, you know, I'm like Pinocchio. My mom sculpted a baby out of modeling clay. Then Zeus came in and said, well, this plasticine won't do, and you know, I'm not even really technically anything.
Right.
She's like a golem.
Exactly. So shut up, Martian Manhunter. That's what I'm saying. It's just shut up, Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, so I think, you know, that's a loner ought to be.
That's a really good point, by the way. That's very valid. I could appreciate that to no end. I think that Reed Richards needs to stop it, personally. You haven't been a member of the Fantastic Four since before it was the Fantastic Four. You're just generally an asshole at all times, and you let everybody know what an asshole you are at all times.
At all times, yeah.
Right. So why don't you get somebody else in? Now I will say this, with the new Inhumans, because you know what's happening, right? As a direct result of the fact that they can't, that Marvel Studios can't use mutants, they are patently going away from mutants. Okay, so what used to be a whole bunch of mutants in the Marvel Universe, now they are becoming a whole bunch of Inhumans.
Oh, okay, that's the way we combat Sony on the page is
right. So now all, you know, where it used to be that it would be mutants, that, you know, every issue somebody would pop up and they'd be a mutant, and then,
well, the mutant was the convenient out.
Right. Now it's Inhumans.
I need a new character who can fold paper 20 times.
That's a great power.
Yeah.
That's a Cypher level power, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, boom, there it is. So, yeah, the mutant was the most convenient way to get around. And also beautiful for the cinema, because you don't have to waste everybody's time with a full, you know, the first act being exposition on how they got their powers.
Right. Exactly. You don't need a protracted origin story.
They just Lady Gaga them in. And,
yeah. I see somebody watched American Horror Story Hotel last night.
I did not. Wow. I made a reference without even knowing what
you
I
did,
was referencing.
Which is exactly what they did with Lady Gaga on American Horror Story Hotel last night. They're just like, oh, look, it's Lady Gaga. Don't worry about it. All right. But that's precisely what they're doing with Inhumans now. Inhumans are getting Lady Gaga'd into the frame. And mutants are being ushered off stage left, but me saying that there's a new, you know, part of the new Marvel is very Inhumans heavy, and in the new Inhumans book, front and center is Johnny Storm. So he's getting away from the Fantastic Four realm, which I think they're doing with everyone because of the whole Sony thing.
Yeah.
This is the thumb in the eye. To Sony. But that being said, if you want to look for a loner that should never be on a team, that is mainly out of almost geographic necessity, it's Karnak.
Oh wow, yeah,
because he's just a dick and a half all the time, you know, with his kung fu powers.
Yeah.
He really should just be on his own. You don't need... When you have Black Bolt on your team, you really don't need a team, number one.
Well, speaking of, I mean, Black Bolt honestly should be a loner.
He is. That's... he's one of those unfortunate, the real loners, right? Like the real... The guys that don't have a choice. And I look at him in the same way that I look at a lot of the mystical characters, which is something I wanted to touch on.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Masters of mysticism tend to fall smartly into that category.
You got guys like Doctor Strange, who, while he's been a defender, he's been an Avenger, he's been in the Illuminati, has pretty, you know, staunchly been a loner when it comes to his own books, except for Renta and Wong and Night Nurse. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's not. But, you know, Phantom Stranger, who I mentioned earlier, Spectre, John Constantine, in a large way, is a loner by choice, because when he gets too close to somebody, he screws them over.
I think that ultimately that comes down to the dynamic I'd spoken to earlier of the, you know, no one not having any peers or anyone who could really truly understand who you are, what you are. And when it comes to the mystic arts, it's rare that you get those guys together.
Right. Unless they're forced outsiders like into a situation.
Yeah. Now, unless there's just something so big no one of them can tackle it, but for the most part, they have to, out of necessity, just keep to themselves.
I agree with that. I agree with that. They don't have much of a choice in the matter, unless you're looking at Dr. Druid, and then he just wanted so badly to be part of something.
Oh, he needed... He was wanty.
He was really wanty.
And according to the Tick Television series, wanty is much worse than needy.
Tell me about your friends from the sea, Cole. Your favorite topic.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. Another, much like when you come from under the sea, as it were. Namor, Aquaman, even characters that like deliberately go there, like Stingray.
Right.
You know, I think the biggest problem there is you're a loner because nobody really ultimately can stand you. And bear with me here. Why would I say no one can stand you? It's not that they can't understand you. It's that all any of these guys ever do is bitch nonstop about the fact that they have the dominion over the bulk of the earth,
right?
Yet get the least action.
That's very true. That's very true. That's what happens when your life, your love, and your lady is the sea.
That is so true.
Yeah, but you're right. Like they are the whiniest. They are the whiniest of the superheroes. Are your kings of the sea? Just nonstop whining and bitching. And moaning. It's painful. It's painful.
So yeah, there is that. We've kind of really covered a lot because so many of them are the nobody's like me.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
You have the ones who are, I don't know, you're speaking of like Constantine really almost falls more into the I'm bad news. You really don't need to. You don't need to be part of my life.
The necessary evil category.
Yeah. Yeah, they literally push others away from them because it's safer for everyone involved. They don't want to have to come to anybody's rescue, and they certainly don't want to be responsible for, you know, anything happening to someone, some hapless... unexpected consequences.
Right.
So, and those are your Constantines, your Wolverines.
Almost your Daredevils.
Yeah, Daredevil to a certain extent. It's this sort of deliberately impersonal. Deliberately shunning everyone else because it's just... actually or perceived to be the best course of action.
Right. This, you know, don't bother to get to know me. I'm not going to be around that long. You'll only get hurt. I'm a rebel dottie. I'm a loner mentality that, you know, and you're right. Like, you've got your Blades that fall into that category. A lot of your street level, even Punisher falls into that category.
Yeah.
Where he won't allow himself to get close to anyone because
and
if he does.
And in Punisher's case, I think he's the one who's the safest bet. I would back him on that.
Right, right. I would be like you are correct.
Just in general, because you just never know. Like if you're having a sleepover, all of a sudden he's going to pull a sling blade. He's like, oh my god, I just kind of woke up by holding this pistol. I'm going back to bed now. To get some sleep. I gotta sleep now!
What are you talking about? Billy Bob Castle? I can't do this.
So, yeah, you know, there are those who... it is a necessary evil and really, I couldn't agree more.
Like, how, okay, so I'm going to bring it around, because, you know, we have to. We have to, so I'm opening this door. We're encroaching on the end of the show, so I feel like I can do this.
And, how, of course, this topic was far too vast to cover.
In one, it really is, but I think we're doing a decent amount of justice to it. But it would not be doing justice to it if I didn't bring it to the dichotomy, okay? And uh-huh. this is it: the dichotomy between two characters in your favorite of all magnum opi in comics, the Watchmen, and those two characters are Asmodeus and Rorschach.
Ozymandias.
Ozymandias.
Ozymandias. Yeah, in fact, in a sense, you could argue that Watchmen is the ultimate primer on superhero loners. Because almost out of necessity, everyone is a loner. The team-up thing just wasn't happening.
That's true.
And in fact, that's what's brilliant about the attempt at creating the Crime Busters, or the Watchmen in the movie. But, you know, the attempt to recapture the dynamic of a team in a modern world, Moore does what Moore does brilliantly all the time, and that is to take concepts and force them into the light of reality. And in this case, it's like even those who feel like this could be a good idea have arguments against.
Right.
Rorschach, in his more lucid period, argues it's more like a publicity stunt. Night Owl recognizes that teaming up can make a difference, but you don't want to be so unwieldy, you know. Two fists are actually better than four.
Right.
And then you have, partly the real brilliance of the comedian is he seems like he does not give a damn about anything.
Right.
But the reality is it's deep down. There is a philosophy that he adheres to, that he hides behind. I mean, he's one of those, for whatever reason, has always just eschewed everyone and taken on the role of the ultimate loner.
Right.
And I think in many ways he and Rorschach are kindred spirits, because they each adhere staunchly to a philosophy that they put forth in vastly different ways.
I think it's a trieste. I think as much as... The problem with Watchmen is it speaks. We argue this all the time, but it really is, in a lot of ways, the perfect encapsulation of the comic book mythos. In some way, it is a trieste on the loneliness that it is to be a superhero. And I think that comes through in a big way. I think you've got guys like
Adrian Veidt, for example, who epitomizes that loneliness, because he is always the smartest man in the room.
Right.
He tries very hard to find the common ground with everyone else. And he understands human nature better than anyone.
Right.
But he also deliberately lives outside it in almost a Red King syndrome kind of way, where he's literally dreaming the world around him.
Right.
Because he's so far removed from that. And in that sense, as a loner, he becomes not unlike comedian and Rorschach, who actually then have a kind of loner triangle, if you will.
But Night Owl is my, I think, loneliness by serendipity is the most painful form of loneliness, because you get the sense that he doesn't want to be lonely. Rorschach is lonely by necessity. Like, yeah. He feels that's him. That's who he is. He cannot be involved. Comedian is, like you said, is lonely by mantra. That almost to a Hindu Buddhist sense, where none of this matters. Like, I have dissolved my ego into this button. That's what I am. You know, so whatever I do, whatever happens to me, whatever happens around me, I find hilarious, because none of it really matters. Dr. Manhattan is lonely by proximity to humanity.
his loneliness comes from some lingering sense of humanity lost.
Right. Exactly. And Night Owl for me is the loneliest, because it's loneliness, it's serendipitous loneliness. He didn't choose the loneliness that he has. History chose the loneliness. Government chose the loneliness.
Yes. Well, he was always sort of an outsider in his own family.
Right.
He was a self-professed disappointment to his father, yet was left well-to-do.
Right.
He pours himself wholeheartedly into his work, and therefore becomes like Rorschach. You know, Rorschach deliberately has no time for anything but the never-ending battle, if you will.
Right, the war.
Where, you know, by being so self-absorbed and so constantly improving on something that it took the better part of a career and losing that career to realize, you know, you see the trappings of a man obsessed with improving his ability to, you know, snatch up guys knocking over liquor stores.
Right.
But do you need that level of ordinance?
Right, right.
As it comes to realize.
Right. So I think Watchmen is, again, the perfect encapsulation of what Batman has been trying to do for 40 years. Or what, you know, and again, I think one of the loneliest characters that is constantly surrounded by others is, in a lot of ways, very, I think it runs an interesting simulacrum to Night Owl, and that is Captain America. Because I've talked about how he's the sad, I really believe that he's the saddest of comic book characters. Everyone, like, what was your classic line from the Wayback Machine about, you know, it's bad enough that you know, you came back in time to watch, like, all of your friends die of old age, but now you can't go get a chicken fried steak from your favorite place because they closed that too, and there's no place left to get a good chicken fried.
It's 7-Eleven now, and
right,
and nothing of your life exists anymore. And as much as you can try to embrace this brave new world, it will never be your home. And in so many ways, he and Superman are kindred spirits.
Right.
In a way you don't really think about it unless you think about it too much, like I do. And that, in his own way, Steve Rogers he's literally the last of his race, of his kind. You know, the Greatest Generation are dying off, and he's in his prime forever, presumably.
Right, exactly.
And so he is rapidly becoming, you know, he's, like you're saying, you watch all your friends die off, you watch all your colleagues, your contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
He is rapidly, you know, you imagine a time where Steve Rogers is going to pick up the paper and find out he is the last person of his generation in existence.
That's a really, really good, poignant point, is what happens when he's the last.
Yes.
The last World War II veteran on Earth, and he has to pick up a paper. The New York Times has, you know, a huge front page spread.
Well, that he's ruined it for everybody else, because that particular individual, the one who would have had the tontine had existed, you know, had the government voted a tontine for the last survivor, is his.
Say it again.
Claim tontine.
Thank you.
Tontine, interesting enough, was also a young character, young hero in Muggerville.
Oh, was he? Was he? Okay.
The thing about it is, up until about 1980, because for some reason he's still a teenager now, he had been just sort of this hideous, deformed goat boy.
Okay.
And then The Empire Strikes Back came out.
Oh, just...
And he took up the mantle of Tontine.
Oh, that's the best. That hurts. I mean, it hurts. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, yeah.
That is like a good whiskey. Like, it burns going down. But once it's inside, it feels warm. Like, you feel good. Like, that's...
There you have...
The legend.
The legend of Tontine. But the thing about it is, this survivor, this final chapter of the World War II history, his legacy, by default, becomes last regular World War II survivor dies. So he is saddled, because of the existence of Captain America, with the designation of being the last regular.
Yeah, that's awful. Like, that's the worst, man.
So, you know, you can imagine his last words were something like, "To hell with Captain America."
Right? Right? Oh, my God. That's good. That's good. And, you know, there is a part of the loner syndrome that comes from, I think, survivor's guilt. Which,
yeah,
we talked about how that makes you a hero. You know, that how that's a catalyst to become a hero back when we were talking about what, you know, what goes into making a hero. But it also goes into making a loner, too. You know, because so definitely true. Captain America has survivor's guilt. Kal-El has survivor's guilt. They've seen too much. They've cared too much. And too much has been, you know, taken from them for them to continue to invest in the way that they have. I think that Nick Fury is one of those guys that's constantly surrounded by people but forever alone. Mm-hmm. Because you never know if the guy standing next to you is a Hydra agent or an LMD, how are you going to allow people to get that close to you?
Yeah, that's so true.
So what are your final thoughts on being a loner in comics?
I think the thing is, like I'd pointed out, there was an article I saw where someone was complaining that it's getting harder and harder, that the loner is falling out of common coinage, and as you said, that's largely a matter of economics, because so many of the loner characters become so popular or popularized, right, that then they're more marketable. You know, mm-hmm, an Avengers with Wolverine and Spider-Man.
Right.
Do us a favor. Why hadn't we thought of this before? And so, you know, the loner goes away, or the necessity of, you know, how does Batman have 10 titles? Or Wolverine, where do you find time for all this?
Exactly.
You know, Daredevil's over there scratching his horned head saying, you know, I've been getting by on one title for forever?
Right. Right. For 50 years, you asshole. I was reading
do us a favor.
I was reading an issue of Avengers today that was one of the more recent ones. I say more recent, I think it was about 10 years old now, but in it, Spider-Man was talking to Wolverine, and they were asking the Thing to join the Avengers, and the Thing was like, well, I'm a member of the Fantastic Four, how am I going to have time for that? And Wolverine's leaning back there, and he says, well, I'm a member of the X-Men and three different Avengers teams, and Spider-Man says, how do you... You know, I've been meaning to ask you, how do you do that? And Wolverine said, and this is a Bendis line, you know, all the way through. And Wolverine says, well, my other mutant power is multitasking.
Nice.
Like, way to go, Bendis. Did you write Seinfeld?
I'm amazed that this character didn't come up before. Since we talked Watchmen, another confirmed loner, Moon Knight.
Moon Knight is yes. Moon Knight is one of those doesn't play well with others loners, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's because I mean he's batshit crazy.
He's insane, and I can't tell you.
Is another one of those reasons like D-Man is out of necessity a loner,
right? And I can't tell you how disappointed I am in the fact that they've announced they had this great run of Moon Knight being a real street level guy, even to the point where they put him in the white suit, which is a choice that I absolutely loved. By the way, I loved what they did with that. I loved how they made that character new.
Well, what's great about Moon Knight is, you know, he operates by night and wears the most glaringly obvious costume that you can see from space on the darkest night of the full eclipse.
And that's what makes him crazy. That's how you know he's crazy. And the other side of that is that they've taken it and they've announced that with the new Marvel comics that are coming out, starting over with number one on a ton of them, they're making a new Moon Knight book that really explores his insanity. And I'm just like, guys, stop. You know, we had just talked about this on this show where they had finally got away from the real heavy dark stuff and were making it fun again, and now they're going right back to the heavy dark stuff. Like, it's time to let that go. But one that I'm surprised that we didn't talk about, considering it's a hometown favorite, as well as a really solid loner character, is the Crow.
Ah, good point. Because so often we do tend to concentrate heavily on the Marvels and the DCs that we forget about the other loners.
Right.
The other characters, I should say.
The Crow. Amazing loner. Loner, I can't even quantify why, you know, he's the Highlander. He's the only one of his kind, and he's brought back for a singular purpose. Why would he? He has all the tools that he needs in his tool belt to get the job done. You know, it's very British in the sense that it's open and closed. Why would he need to be with anybody else?
Yeah.
Which I think is a really interesting concept and take. Not to mention, like I said, we would be remiss if we didn't mention a hometown favorite.
I'm going to challenge you with one final loner.
All right.
Who came to mind this morning.
Okay.
And I nearly forgot about this, but I want to bring up a certain loner who most people probably haven't thought about. But he is another of these confirmed loners. He tends to work alone, but like so many loners, he did eventually take on a sidekick. He's a loner, much like Moon Knight or Rorschach, out of just being insane.
Okay.
And that is none other than Ambush Bug.
Oh! See, Ambush Bug, okay. So,
I mean, granted, he did eventually adopt Cheeks the Toy Wonder.
Well, yeah.
But, for the most part, you'd have to say he prefers working alone. Because when you're going to go bug Superman incessantly, you need to do it alone.
Okay, so here's my take on Ambush Bug. And to a much, much lesser extent, it's the same take I have on Daredevil. Okay? And like I said, to a much lesser extent, because I think that Daredevil is a patent ripoff of Ambush Bug, and to a lesser extent even She-Hulk back when Byrne was doing the break the fourth wall thing. I don't feel that Ambush Bug is a loner, and I don't feel that Ambush Bug is a loner for this reason. Because Ambush Bug understands that he's in a comic.
Yeah.
So he's with us. So we're there with him all the time. So when he's, you know, lighting fireworks, you know, down the crack of Batman's ass, he's doing it for an audience of, you know, tens of thousands of comic book readers. He's not doing it because he's crazy and then he scampers off. He's doing it with a wink and a nod to us saying, hey, look what I'm doing. You know, tell me how great I am, and wanders off. So in the sense of within the four walls of a comic book, yes, he's a loner. But considering the fact that he he is kind of the pioneer of breaking that fourth wall.
Yeah.
I feel like he doesn't feel like a loner because he's with us all the time, his adoring fans. So he's doing what he does for an audience. You know, he's not he's waiting for the applause break in the live show. Whereas, you know, everybody else is living their life, he's pausing for the big laugh before going on. That's the way I see Ambush Bug, and to a lesser extent, and not done nearly as well, that's the way I see Daredevil. That's why, or Deadpool, and that's why I didn't bring him up.
Yeah, in fact, when you were talking about that, I started to invoke Deadpool in my mind. And then one of the other loners, who's a loner just out of belligerent necessity, is Lobo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nobody's good enough.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
The self-imposed last of his kind.
Right.
Because he pretty much murdered all the rest of them himself.
Right. I mean, most of the loners that we talked about that choose to be loners are loners through Schadenfreude, you know, to some extent, where it's, you know, but Lobo definitely is the nobody is good enough to hang out with Lobo loner. Yeah. Like, I'm the best there is, you know, and because of that, you aren't worthy. Like the Thanos level loner, where you're not worthy of hanging out with me. Like, that's just not, you don't pass the test to be, you know, on the same level as I am.
Exactly.
So, is there a place in comics from here on out for loners?
I think so, and I think, in a way, perhaps, the door is wide open.
Okay.
For a new crop of loners, because we've lost so many of them.
That's true.
The hardcore loners. So many of them have, you know, when the Punisher's in a group,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, even Triton from the Inhumans gets involved with, was it Deep Six?
Deep Six, right. Right.
So...
So yeah, I agree. All right. It's time for us to
yeah, we better get this on the road here.
Yeah. So why don't you wrap us up? I think we did a good job with loners. I don't think either Cole or I can be loners as long as this podcast exists.
Yeah.
I tried
the loner thing with the original Rand Kirkpatrick.
Doesn't work. I can't be left alone too long. But doctor's orders. It's
indeed.
Bad things happen. So why don't you wrap us up and we'll be back next week for another exciting adventure in Higgins Comics.
Absolutely. We have some really great stuff coming up for you in the next few weeks. And you can check out that. You can check out the past episodes, future episodes of this and other shows. A lot more shows are coming back online here pretty soon. And, of course, all kinds of antics as we go into next year with the anticipation building.
Yes.
Yeah. For All Con, and very soon, if you check out the website that I'm about to give you, an announcement about the return of the Jedi Cole Universe comic toy and collectible swap meet.
The wildly successful.
Let's just say right now, you may want to know when it's going to be.
Oh.
So.
That's another whiskey joke right there.
That wasn't whiskey then, huh?
I think it was whiskey. I think that was a little whiskey. It wasn't as good. It was like wild turkey.
So
it's going to hurt tomorrow.
Indeed. And here you are with all that NyQuil.
Oh, God. Yes.
So basically, what I'm getting at is check us out at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can watch for the occasional tweet on the Twitters, at the Jedi Cold U. And if you're keen on conventions, as I mentioned, and solely in the state of Texas anyway, you can check out Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. And for now, that's about it. I'm about to enter the world of modern people with a modern people phone, so there's a good chance the video selfie may be back.
Oh, video selfie!
Whatever that is, YouTube channel.
I feel like in a weird way that you're going to booster gold this thing somehow. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I feel like you're entering the world of like Booster Gold or like one of those villains who, you know, gets the auction for the Chitauri arm rifle, like it, like some street level guy that ends up with a Chitauri arm rifle and goes nuts, like all kinds of stuff's gonna start happening. All right, guys, well, join us next week for another issue of Hey Kids Comics. We're not making any promises about what it's gonna be yet, but I guarantee you this. I will probably be on NyQuil still, so that's going to be fun. All right, guys. Cole, say goodnight.
Good night, everybody, and we'll see you in a week.
Good night. Get out of the house. Stop being a loner.
Yeah, don't be a loner.
Agoraphobia is rough. Get out of there. Go see some people. All right, good night, everybody.